Welcome everybody to the ninth lecture of the Deep Reinforcement Learning course. We are nearly in December already, and we are getting to the part where there will be quite a lot new slides. So even if I try to get everything ready, sometimes things will be under construction, similarly to the soft actor critic agent from the previous recording, which is still not finished on the slides, but today the slides are a bit more finished, hopefully. Before I get to the course itself, are there any questions on your side? Oh, I didn't do it, so I'm sorry about it. So now the recording continues and the slides have already been uploaded. So are there some other questions? Nope. That's great. Then let's get to it. Today, I will talk about things which I haven't yet included or didn't include in the course in the last year. So I hope everything will be smoother, a bit more than on the last lecture, but we will see how it goes. So generally, we are done with the continuous actions, right? So for the continuous actions, well, we know how to use the stochastic policy gradient, we know how to use the deterministic policy gradient like DDPG or DD3, and this combination soft actor critic SAC, and that's, as far as I know, these are the state of the art in that area even until today. Yeah, we will talk about the PPO at some point, so that also can be used, but generally I would say that's it. So now we will get back to the case where we will have discrete number of actions. And what we will try to concentrate on is to do both better performing agents and also to better use distributed computation during training. So being able to train on a much larger and a higher scale up until today. For that, we will need to start with some like theoretical background, like some more definitions and ways how to compute the estimate of the return. And the first thing which is used in this area is something called eligibility traces. First, before we get to the eligibility traces, we will improve our off-policy correction for an n-step return. So we already talked about the n-step return, so the estimated n-step return, so the t from t to t plus 1, is the n-step return, meaning we sum the n returns. We sum n rewards, each multiplied by the corresponding gamma. And then, if the episode is still running, we compute the value estimate of the state into which we got after these n steps multiplied by gamma to n, right? So this is something which we have already seen. And generally in the next slides, I will be quite careless about the ends of the episodes, right? So here I just say, okay, the episode is still running. And generally, I will try to avoid the clutter by mostly concentrating on the case where the episode is still running, but all the results should apply also like when you are very careful and spell out exactly the cases for the ends of the episodes. So this is the usual n-step return. Note that we can write it recursively. We can write it recursively by saying, okay, it's zero if the episode is already ended. If it should be like a zero step, right? If we have no more returns to actually use, we just use the estimation of the value function from the state st, And otherwise, if we have at least one reward, then we take the value and then gamma times the n minus one return in the next time step, right? So this is just like a recursive definition of this above equation. And now we will rewrite this recursive definition somehow. So we will look at what the n step return minus the value function in the original state will give us. It's definitely missing something here. There should be minus so I'm sorry, there should be something different here, so just minus VST, right? Yep. So we will see what happens. Yep, so it should be also here. I'm sorry. I will need to create a paper and write down what I need to fix. So I'm sorry, I will just go grab a pencil so that I can mark this down, because otherwise I would not fix all of the problems probably. So this is slide 3. Yep. So we, in order to use this recursively, we will also introduce the minus vs plus one and plus vs plus st plus one here, right? So we just added it inside and then also added it here. So this allow us to say, okay, this n-step return can be actually written in this form where we have this value, which is the TD error, right? We already used the term TD error to be like the one-step temporal difference error. So that's exactly what's appearing there, right? Plus gamma times this minus V ST plus one. So the n step return can be seen as the TD error, right? I'm sorry, this is really there are really many problems here. Okay, it must be much easier than I did it. So let me just have a look at it. Right, so for this to work, there has to be a minus VST here and minus VST here, right? It wouldn't make sense without it. So we can compute the advantage, in a sense, right, as a sum of the independent of the TD errors. Right? So this is what I wanted to get there. To get there the TD error, and then if we recursively use this this definition and rewrite it over and over, we will sum a lot of these TD errors for increasing time steps and for increasing gammas. So this is a way how we can look at the n-step return, is that it is actually a reasonable extension of this one-step version, and we are just accumulating the errors in different time steps, right? Each multiplied by the gamma to I. In this specific case, this rewrite just telescopes, right? So the gamma V ST plus one will be also part of the next TD error. In the next TD error, it will be multiplied by another gamma. So in the next TD error, this element will be gamma times V times ST plus one. So actually the result of all these TD errors is just the lot of rewards, right? Plus the last one, ST plus N, right? Minus the first one. So that's just what will happen here. Now, this way of writing return as sum of TD errors will be actually important to us. So first, let's use it to come up with a better policy correction. We have already seen one and how it worked. Well, we defined the important sampling ratio for time t as being the ratio of the target policy probability divided by the behavior policy probability of the action in the time step. And we also used the general definition, which is, okay, please give me the off policy correction from the time step t to time step t plus n. So what we, let's realize that the expectation of this important sample ratio is one. That will be something which will be interesting later. So generally, like, you are dividing two distributions. So on average, they will just be 1 over k divided by 1 over k. So intuitively, it kind of makes sense. And mathematically, it's not that much different. So this expectation goes from the actions sampled by the, okay, this should be the behavior policy. And this is multiplied by the ratio of the target and the behavior policy. So we can see that the behavior policy will cancel out. And we are just summing the probability of actions under the target policy, which is definitely one, right? And this can be extended to multiple time steps. So important sample ratio is just the one on average when we sample actions from the behavior distribution policy. So until now, we performed this off policy correction by taking the n step return and then applying the correction, right? So taking the full result and then using the correction for steps from t to t plus n minus one to account for all the actions which were actually sampled from the behavior policy instead of the target one. So let's call this an important sampling corrected and step return. However, such a correction in such a way has got a variance which is larger than necessary. Like, notably, if we write this using a recursive definition, then we can say, okay, so we need to correct this R t plus one in the first step by this ratio, and then we need to continue with the n minus one step return. So this is something what we already used here, right? Just the recursive definition of the n step of the n step return. And now note that this reward, it depends on at plus at. But it doesn't depend on at plus one and later ones, right? It's fine to do the correction just for the action at to get the correct expectation. However, we are actually applying the full correction for all the n steps. So we could make the results slightly less noisy by actually correcting for this time step t, whenever we are using the rt plus one. And then, of course, we need to account for the full n step return in the future, including the t step. Right? So for that, we needed to know that the rest of the important sampling ratio here from t plus 1 to t plus n has an expectation of 1. And because it's independent on RT, we can just get rid of it. So that's a good thing. We can actually decrease the application of the of policy correction for the returns which come sooner in the trajectory. And we can write this once again recursively by saying, okay, the of policy corrected n step return is the return plus gamma times of policy corrected n minus one return, however, all multiplied by the important sampling ratio for this time step t. Right? So the same as in the non policy case, we just added the raw t here explicitly. So this seems reasonably. But we can actually do better, and that's where the control varieties will appear. Specifically, if this rho is zero, which or a very small value, then our estimate will be a very small one. The important sampling ratio will make up for that by the rho being large at some other times, which will increase the estimate. So the expectation is fine, but the variance fluctuates. So what we could do, we could decrease the variance by returning, let's say, the VST whenever this important sampling ratio is zero. Right? It kind of makes sense if we did something what we would never do under the target policy, then either we can return zero, which is what we do, but instead we could just say, okay, we don't know anything, so let's estimate this return by just taking the VST, right? We don't know anything else. So what we could do is we could rewrite this estimate by taking the previous one and then adding 1 minus rho t of VST. Now, this doesn't actually change the expectation because this rho t is independent on this state. And it has an expectation of 1. So actually, this has an expectation of 0. And from the point of the final return, this is not here, actually. Right? This has an expectation of 0. But the good thing of this member is that it decreases variance. Right, because when this sampling ratio is zero, for example, then we just return VS. So that's a good thing. This part is for some reason called a control variety. I don't know why. And they say it's for obscure reasons in the book. So now let's look at how we can use this definition and rewrite it again as the sum of TD errors, right? So we subtract VST from both sides. Here, when we subtract VST, we will just leave the raw T because the one will just disappear, right? Then we will introduce and immediately subtract the gamma times VST plus 1. And this gives us a recursive definition which we can use. And we will see that in each time step, once again, there will be minus VST here. In each time step, we add this TD error. This time is actually being multiplied by the of policy correction plus gamma times the n minus one step return. So again, for each time step, we get a TD error, but it's not multiplied just by gamma to e how it worked before, right? That's what we did here. In the regular case, it was just the TD error multiplied by gamma to e. But we also multiply the TD error by the corresponding sampling ratios? Well, actually, from the T to the ith one, right? So it's like a large product. So this is a way which we will extend a bit later to some used formula. So let's now leave this rewrite of policy correction, and let's turn our attention to eligibility traces. The eligibility traces are a mechanism of actually combining multiple n-step returns for different n's. Right? We have seen that using some n's works better for some cases. We probably want to use n's which are large enough so that we get good estimates, but not too large, so that we can learn even during the episodes. Also, using the infinite step returns would amount for the Monte Carlo, which can only learn after the whole episode is ended, and so on. So when we are considering which n step return are we going to use, we are actually not limited to just choosing one n. We could use a combination of any number of n step estimates for various number of n's, as long as it's an average. Right, so if we have weights which sum to one, and we say, okay, we will weight the n-step returns for different n's by these weights, then this value has also the same expectation. So it's a good estimate, but we hope that maybe it would have a better, means decreased variance. So instead, if we redo this like arbitrarily to use two-step and four-step returns, in the way it's two-thirds and one-third, then it will work. But we probably need some more reasonable or principled way of combining these. And that will be the lambda return. So lambda return for a given lambda is defined as the combination of the various n-step returns from 1 to infinity, such that we start by just really taking the one-step return. And then the next step return, 1 n larger, is multiplied by gamma, right? So gamma times the two-step, and that should be lambda. Lambda of times the two-step return plus lambda squared times the three-step return, and so on and so on and so on. So for the lambda zero, all these values are actually not there, and we are actually just using the one-step return. For lambda being one, we as written here, the sum doesn't really work well, but for lambda one, we usually define it by the limit of this sum, and this sum converges to just the full return GT. Right, so for lambda one, we just use the Monte Carlo to actually sum all the returns. And then for the values in between, we somehow average or combine the n-step returns by like decreasing the the influence of for the larger and larger n's, right? So there is a visualization here. So we weight the n-step returns in some exponential way, and whenever at some point the episode ends, then all these are all the same, right? So the sum of the weights for all these time steps will be actually used to use the full return. This one minus lambda here is there to normalize the coefficients to one, right? So our coefficients are one, lambda square, and so on. So we need to actually get the sum of those, which is 1 over 1 minus lambda. So we multiply it by 1 minus lambda, and we know that these lambda to e multiplied by 1 minus lambda, this is exactly the set of coefficients which will sum to 1. In case of the episodic tasks, we can explicitly write what will happen after the task terminates. So instead of having the sum infinite, we might just say, okay, so until the episode ends, we will just use the longer, more n and n step returns. And when it finishes, we will just use the full return multiplied by the corresponding lambda, and this lambda equals to the sum of all the coefficients there until the end of the episode. Yep. So when comparing then some algorithm which would estimate the returns with the n-step methods, so this is one of the random walk examples which we have seen already, you can see that the different values of lambda, which are not visible on the image, but here we have n1, n2, n3, and so on, and so on. And here we will have lambda being 0, probably, right? Or the red one will be lambda being 0. Then will be lambda, a very small value, I don't know, 0.1. And there will be something like lambda, like 0.99 up until here. So the different values of lambda concentrate on a different n-step return. So we get a similar trade-off what we get in the n-step case. Usually, what we actually work with is the like truncated lambda return, as we had n-step returns with some limit. So we also might be interested in some limited case. So the truncated n-step return has some largest number of n's which we actually want to consider in these n-step returns, and what. How are we going to do it? Well, it's actually very similar to this case before, but we don't stop whenever the episode terminates, but instead we stop whenever we have hit the limit of where we want to look through, right? So we are combining the n step returns from 1 to n, each being weighted by lambda to I minus 1. And then we take the final n-step return, which we multiply by lambda to n, and this lambda to n is the sum of all the remaining lambdas, right? So whenever we are doing this this image, then all these are just being estimated using the largest n-step return. I am promising you that this is one of the last sums as the TD errors. However, we can use the fact that the n-step returns are can be expressed as the sum of the TD errors, and I'm sorry, but all these VSTs are missing everywhere. Then. We can actually use this to explain all of these, to rewrite all of these as the sum of TD errors. And then in order to come up with the recursive definition, what we do is we take this TD error for the time step T out of all these Gs, right? Out of all of them, we will just take it away. So what we will get, 1 minus lambda, then the sum for all the n's And this is the TD error at time t taken out from gt t plus I. And this is the one taken out of this. And at this point, we can use the truncated return from the next time step. However, we have taken out this one TD error. So we need to multiply it by gamma, right? Because that's what happens here. The next TD errors are multiplied by gamma. And also we need to multiply it by lambda because all of these G's which we are expanding are having one lambda here. So this means we can actually write it quite simply in a recursion because all these lambdas, when summed together, just sum to one. That's one of the reasons why how we defined these weights. So all this first element is just the TD error. And then we have the recursion, which I don't know what this D is. This just should be there. Then it's multiplied by gamma and lambda. So the final result looks like, again, a sum of TD errors. But this time, we are not only multiplying by gamma, but also multiplying by lambda. So in a sense, this seems to indicate that these lambdas and gammas somehow behave the same, that they both discount. They discount the TD errors in the future, but they are not the same because in the definition of the TD error, only the gamma is being used, right? This TD error is just R T plus one plus gamma times V S T plus one minus V S T. So they differ in being used here. So when we change gamma, we actually change the optimum. We change the behavior. We change the optimum policy which we are going to. With lambda, it's not really so. Lambda only changes the quality of the estimator, right? So by changing lambda, we don't influence the optimum policy. However, we change like the noisiness of our estimation. So in a sense, we can get algorithms which use gamma of one, but still use some kind of a discounting using the eligibility traces. And that might be interesting at some in some times. Note that we have just used one simple lambda to define the individual weights, and we just multiply it when going higher. However, in theory, we could use different lambdas for different time steps. And we will actually see algorithms, mostly on the next lecture, which actually use this, right? So it's not like we need to wait these n-step returns in this nice and regular way. Instead, we might have the specific lambda I for each time step I, and we might want to dynamically alter these lambdas, right? So, in a sense, if you look at what we did in the control varieties, then here we also got the sum. And what we got here was the gamma, then the important sampling ratio and the TD error. So the further we were in the future with the TD errors, the more of policy correction we needed to make there, right? And then if you compare this to the sum of TD errors using the lambda, then the resulting value is very similar. We use all of these values, gammas, lambdas, and rho's, to somehow discount the future TD errors. So if we consider a different lambda e at each step, then we just replace n lambdas by the product actually of the and corresponding lambdas, but they are not all the same, so we need to write this product explicitly. Then we can rewrite this by this, and this is very similar to the off-policy correction, where instead of this raw of this lambda, we have raw t plus j. So in a sense, this off-policy correction and these eligibility traces are somehow technically very similar, and we will see that later in the algorithm of a V-trace. So let's say that we would like to actually use or apply these lambda returns. One thing which we can do is we can just use the definition, right? The definition tells us how to compute the estimate in some given state. So if we have simulated an episode, we are using the truncated one, for example. So I don't know, we are using N10. So after 10 steps, we have all the values which we need to actually compute of policy or lambda return, whatever we want for these 10 steps. And then we can use just the usual approach of, I don't know, training a critic, maybe using some policy gradient, whatever, right? We can just use the better estimate of the return. This is sometimes called a forward view on the problem, right? So that we are waiting in this state until we observe enough returns until either end of the episode or until some fixed horizon of n steps, for example. And once we have all of that, we update the estimate and do the changes, right? However, it is actually possible to do it a bit differently, to start actually updating the weights immediately, right? Instead of waiting until we see all of these steps in the future, we might perform the updates as soon as possible, right? And whenever we just observe the first value, then we might do a change which corresponds to using just this one step return, and not the rest of them, right? And then whenever we observe the second one, we might somehow redo the update, right? So that it will include not just the one step return, but also the two step return. And we might do this gradually. So whenever we take another step, we know that the estimates which we had in all the previous states can now be updated. They can also include this another step into account. And actually, this can be done efficiently, so that we don't have to explicitly recompute everything in every state. But I will show you just in a minute how we can do it. So this is the so-called backward view, where whenever you do a step, you update the weights such that it corresponds to performing the update in the previous time steps, as in the forward view, if we got another step. And so how does it look? The algorithm which implements this is called TD lambda. The TD lambda is just policy evaluation, right? It's a non-policy, but it utilizes this backward view. And the thing is, we know that this return can be written as the which one do I want? I want this one, right? We know that this n step return can be implemented just by the sums of the TD errors multiplied by gamma to I and lambda to I. So what we do, we compute the TD error. That's this. This is lambda is the TD error. Right. And what we need to do is we need to change all all the losses in the past time steps to also increase, to also contain this element. And this element is the TD error times the gradient of the estimation of the V function in the corresponding time step. So what do we do is we track Z, and Z is tracking the gradient of our value function. And we use, in a sense, like a momentum of gamma and lambda, so that after some steps, this includes not just the gradient with respect to our to the current state, but it also includes the discounted gradient with respect to the previous and one before previous and one before previous states and so on. Right, so this Z, that's the these are the gradients which should be multiplied by the current temporal difference error. Right, so we do it, we multiply it by the current temporal difference error, and this is the gradient which will update me and all the previous states by adding the current TD error into their n value estimate. Yep. So if you look at it, it's something very close to momentum, right? Because we track the first moment of the gradient using some exponential moving average. And in each time step, we use this momentum multiplied by the current TD error, and this will update the estimates not just for my state, but also for the past states, as if we have introduced another TD error into the sum, right, into this sum. So generally, I'm definitely not saying that momentum is doing exactly the same thing. It is not. However, it always seemed to me that in a sense, momentum tends to be doing similar thing, right? Because it remembers the updates of the gradient and then we forget them and update them again a bit. So in a sense, it also like updates the value in the previous states, even if with slightly less force. And the important difference is that we use the TD error here, right? Normally we don't do it, we would just apply the gradients directly. So I am not really sure whether your heads aren't exploding. So let me just show the last slide and let's have a small break or something. We have talked about how we can write the of policy correction using the sum of TD errors and how we can write the lambda return using TD errors. So these things can be combined together. And we can actually implement the n-step return, which includes both the traces and the off-policy correction. I didn't finish to edit to the slides, but I will hopefully do it. So this is, in a sense, the most generic estimate which we will encounter in the course, and it allows us to use like different number of steps. We use the control variance to minimize the variance for the off-policy correction. We use lambda return so that we can discount the future without changing the actual solution, and and this is how it looks like. So to see some, I promised a pause, right? So let's take 3-minute break, then we shall continue. If there are some questions in the meantime, then please, by all means, don't hesitate to ask. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, they cannot because this delta includes gamma inside, right? So the delta t plus I, that's the reward in t plus I plus one. That's like a temporal difference. Error in this time step. And here we have gamma. Sorry, this should be V S T plus I plus 1 minus V S T plus I. Right, so this is this what we call a TD error. That's what we started with when we talked about the temporal difference methods. Right, this is what our current estimate looks like. And this is what our estimate looks like after one step. So after we have performed one action, we can see we got some reward. And then we can estimate the value in the next time step by looking at the gamma times the value function in the next state. And now these quantities should ideally be the same. Right after the Bellman operator would converge, after we have found the fixed point, then all these would be zero because our estimate and expectation would be the same as actually simulating one step and then looking at the estimate there. And the difference between gamma and lambda is just in the fact that the gamma is present here and lambda is not. So this gamma influences the optimal policy because when gamma is here, we actually care about optimizing this gamma to I R I or something, while lambda plays no such a role. So when modifying lambda, the results shouldn't really change, meaning the optimum policy doesn't change. While moving with gamma, it does change. That's why we have two constants because they play a different role. And here we have a third constant and that also plays a different role. I understand that it's a bit tricky or convoluted. I haven't really teached it yet. So maybe in the end we will just decide that it wasn't worth it, but I have to say that the current best algorithms actually tend to use lambda as well, and they also use this gamma correction. So this is a form which is being used both by the agent 57, which was able to solve all the agent environments better than humans, and also Impala and so on. So it probably makes sense to talk about it, but maybe I just need to improve my explanation skills. you will be the judges to that. Yep. Generally, yes, so like the whole reinforcement learning is that we would like to find the best estimate for the return as possible, right? We have some approximate value functions, we can simulate the episodes. And what we need to do is we need to like to find the targets which we want to converge to. And the better estimates of return we get, the faster the convergence. So for Monte Carlo methods, we just use the full returns. We just simulated the episode until the end. And then we use those as our Gs, right? In temporal difference methods, in the Q-learning, we just did one step and then looked at the estimation in the next time step. And both of these are suboptimal because using the Monte Carlo means we need to simulate the whole episode. And that might be difficult for some of the environments, and we learn only after the episode ends. Using one step TD error, it's better because we can learn immediately. However, our estimate has large variance, and it can even diverge in this off-policy functional approximation case because it will just change too widely, and there will be this feedback loop, as in the Baird country example. So. Ideally, we would like to get the best of all of these words, right? To get to use larger sums of rewards as our estimates of return, because usually the more steps we use, the less role the estimated value function will play. But we also want to learn fast. So this eligibility traces allow us to somehow smoothly transition between the N which we are going to use. For some tasks, maybe we just want to look at one or two steps. For somebody, we would like to look even further apart. So this lambda tells us like how are we composing our estimates from the individual N step returns. This might be defined like without this truncated version, right? But if we do this without truncation, if really we just consider all possible n-step returns until the future, then we need this backward view algorithm. We need some way how to actually update the losses in the previous time steps, because now we have observed different part of this sum during the beginning of the episode. So the TD lambda is a clever algorithm, and there are some other algorithms. But in practice, I would say that it's the algorithms tend to limit this instead. So we have some fixed number saying, okay, I just want to look at most 80 steps and nothing more. But still the lambda can tell you whether you are looking more at the last 40 of them, or whether you are looking on all of them, or whether you are looking only at some initial beginning of those. And the smaller the lambda, the larger, the faster, the smaller constant should be, right? In the Bellman operator. However, it will be there the variance will increase, I think. I'm not perfectly sure about that. But generally, we just need to find the best way to compute our estimate of the return, definitely. So now we have like multiple hyperparameters which we can fiddle with, right? The gamma, which changes the final policy, but with gamma, okay, I said it incorrectly. The gamma is the parameter which actually changes the convergence rate. So the smaller the gamma, the faster is the contraction, or the larger is the contraction of the Bellman backup operator. However, changing gamma, unfortunately, changes the optimal behavior. So we don't really want to say gamma is 0.5 or something, right? So instead, we use this 0.99, 99.7, 99.9 or something so that we don't change much the outcome, but we still make the contraction reasonable. So we actually know that there is some optimal behavior. And then the lambdas can also be used somehow suitably to make sure that we learn from different step returns. And the off-policy correction is there just for like dealing with the fact that we have sampled the actions in a different policy than the one which we actually want to estimate. We will see an example immediately in the next paper. But by all means, if you have some questions, please still ask before I will go further. So what I am going to talk about now is V-trace. V-trace is an algorithm for computing some version of an n-step return with the off-policy correction. It was proposed in this two-year-old Impala paper, and it works like this. In this part, I have used the notation from the original paper, so it's going to be slightly different than what we use, but I think we can manage. So this V-trace, that's the VS, is defined like this. It's like we have created a lot of these G's, right? So this is like a version of G, right? We could even say this is like G V trace. And I've actually seen this in some of the papers, later ones. So we define it as the sum of TD errors. And we use gamma as you would expect, and then a lot of C factors. So let's dissect the parts. This delta TV, that's just one factor. That's really a weird notation, but that's how they do it. And this is the TD error plus an off-policy or a Morton sampling correction. Actually, it's a bit more complex. So this raw T, that's the important sampling ratio for time step t. However, clipped by the raw head. And the CI, it's also an important sampling correction, but once again, clipped by C head. So in a sense, this is just a weird rewrite of the control variance estimate, right? So if we go back, we can see that here we have said that the n-step return was the gamma to I, then all the important sampling ratios from t to t plus I, and then temporal difference in t plus I. So now if I get back to V-trace, that's exactly what we have there. However, we have put the last correction separately to the TD error definition, and here are the product of all the previous important sampling ratios, and we clip both of these with raw head and C head parameter. So if we are in the on-policy case, then all these are just ones, right? And this reduces to n-step regular target, the Bellman one after the n-steps. This is an important property which other algorithms used to do the correction didn't have, so that's why it's mentioned. So it's like a strict generalization of doing an n-step return. Now, why are actually there these two factors, these raw t and ci? Well, even if they are both important sample ratios, they play different roles. This raw t, which is being used also in the definition of the TD error, then it actually defines the fixed point of the update true. So in a sense, changing this raw t changes the solution, right? If it would be unclipped, then of course the solution would be the same as you would expect. But when you clip it, then by clipping raw, you actually change the outcome. And it can be proven, we will actually see it even, that when we clip this raw value, then what we will learn is we will not learn the behavior according to the target policy, but according to some combination of the target policy and the behavior policy multiplied by the clipping factor. So in theory, if this is infinite, right, there is no clipping, then this element is always larger than this one, and the policy which we optimize is actually the target policy. But for example, if this raw hat is one, which is the usual hyperparameter, then we actually estimate the behavior of a policy which is the minimum between the B and pi. And it's only just proportional, of course, so you need to normalize it to make sure that it's one. So that's why we have a name for it. So doing the off-policy correction differently changes the solution. Well, what is surprising is that these C's, so the importance sampling corrections for the previous time steps, these ones, they actually do not influence the solution. So they influence only the speed of convergence, the contraction rate in the operator. So that's an interesting thing, is that actually, even if we added those because we expected them to be required there because of the off-policy correction, only the last time step, the one where we compute the TD error on, needs to be off-policy corrected. And the previous time steps are not actually required there. However, they can be useful. Meaning that they actually impact the speed of convergence. So why do we have two of these? It kind of makes sense to first utilize the C hat to be one, right? We have a large product of factors here. And the problem of off-policy correction was that the individual correction factors were too large, right? So that when multiplied, they would create a huge number, which would create a huge gradient, and we would just diverge. Right? There was a reason for the large, extremely large variance in the important sampling correction. So limiting them to one is a good thing because it makes sure that the variance of our estimates stays reasonable. For raw, we might consider a larger threshold because the larger this threshold, the better to the target policy will we be, right? So if this threshold will be infinite, then we would really estimate the value function of the target policy. When it's 100, it's just the minimum of 100 times the behavior policy and the target policy. And because there is only one number, there is only one raw in all these terms, then it may not increase the variance so wildly, right? Because this large product, here we have limited each of these elements to one, and there is just one raw. So even if there was a limit to 10, then maybe it would not increase the variance so much while allowing us to get better to the greedy solution or something. However, the people found out that using larger values for the clipping value doesn't actually work in practice, or it doesn't work better. So nowadays, people tend to use the same clipping factor of one, even for the last of the important sampling ratios factors. So this is something I copy pasted from the paper just before the lecture. So in order to prove what I just said, that these C's and rows play a different role, what we would do is we would start by defining the equivalent to the, of the Bellman operator, like V trace Bellman operator R, which would just apply whatever is there in the definition of the V trace function. It can be proven that it is really a contraction with the constant, which is a bit terrible, but it can be proven that it is something like 1 minus 1 minus gamma times beta. And for some value of parameters, this is actually less than one. So it is really a contraction. So I may add the computation of showing the factor, but I don't think it's that important. What is more interesting is why this actually converges to the value function of this weird policy, right? So once we know that the operator has a fixed point, then we know that there is just a unique solution to the problem. So what we do is we actually prove that if we take the value function which corresponds to this policy, which is a combination of the target and the behavior policy, then the result of applying this R operator to such a V will be V, right? So we will show that it's a fixed point, and when it's a fixed point, then we know that that's the only fixed point, and what the operator converges to is actually a value function of this mixed policy, right? And what we do is we actually show that all of these TD errors are zero, right? And once all of the TD errors are zero, and they are just the whole operator is just the combination of all of these TD errors, then it will also be zero and we will have a fixed point. And when you look at one TD error, then there is the return, the reward, I'm sorry, gamma times the value estimate in the next state and the value estimate in the current state. And this is all multiplied by this rho. So this rho, that's the minimum of rho hat and the important sampling ratio. Now this expectation goes over the behavior policy, right? So we have sampled the actions according to the behavior policy. Now, what we will do is we will take this minimum out of the we will take this value out of the minimum. So what we can do is we can imagine that there is the mu type, the mu, like this rho hat is multiplied by mu divided by nu. And we will take the one over mu outside of the minimum, right? So we will have the mu divided by mu, this will cancel, and there will be another mu factor being kept there. Which this will allow us to cancel the behavior policy, and we will get here the minimum of rho hat times behavior policy times target policy, and that's actually the definition of our mixed or combined policy, right? So when we look at this, then apart from the normalization, this is actually an update for a TD error for this specific policy. So that's zero, right? If this is really the value function corresponding to this policy, which magically appeared in the rules, then this is zero and we are done. So this is really like surprising in a sense that in order to do the correction, it's enough just to look or to consider the last of policy correction for the time step where we evaluate the TD error. And these C's, right, they are in fact not needed for the off-policy correction, and instead we can consider them to be traces, right? We can consider these C's to actually be the time-dependent lambdas. So this is not there because of the off-policy correction per se, but we consider it to be the factor which cuts the traces. So generally, we want to learn from n steps, but whenever we find out that the policy diverged too much in these decisions, in these n decisions, then we will tune it down, right? We will create a lambda which says, okay, we are not learning much from this n-step update because this n-step update was performed by choosing actions which I don't actually want to apply. And the good thing is that we can actually clip this to one, right? So we can clip all of these individual values to one. It will not change the outcome. And this is what allows us to do the variance reduction, so that we only need to, without changing the behavior, we can just clip all of these, right? So that's why it's called a V-trace. Even if we didn't start with traces, the proof actually shows that a lot of these factors actually play just the role of the trace and not the off-policy correction. Yup. So this was a lot of theoretical things. So let's just get to some results as well, right? So this algorithm was proposed in the paper which called Impala, Importance Weighted Actor Learning Architecture. And it's like a different version to A3C agent, right? And the difference is that for the A3C and PAAC and so on, we need to communicate the gradients or the parameters between the individual workers. Like what we did in the PAAC is that we have sent the actions to the workers. The workers gave us the outputs. So that trajectory there, trajectory back. But whenever we did the update, we needed to copy the weights to the individual actors, right? So all of these actors needed to be up to date or synchronized with the current version of the parameters. But for large scale distributed learning, this is very impractical because we need to communicate a lot of parameters through the network back and forth. So instead, what they do is they send only trajectories back and forth. So if we have an actor, the actor can simulate a whole episode without being in sync regarding the parameters. Instead, it will just use whatever it has, and maybe after it has finished the whole episode or done a lot of steps, then it will do the synchronization. So there are some visual comparisons to that. In the batched A3C, it means we do one step synchronously, another step synchronously, another step synchronously, another step synchronously, and then do the training, right? So this is how we have implemented PAAC in the practicals. We might do it a bit better, like each of these environment might know that they just want to do four steps, so they might do the inference independently, and then wait longest worker, and that might be a bit faster. But here in Pala, they just the actors just simulate things. They are being collected to the training server, which runs the updates, and then once upon a time, these parameters are being copied to the actors. However, because we don't synchronize the parameters, the policies used by the workers, by the agents, is different than the current policy in the learner, right? We are behind. And this being behind creates the reason why we need the off-policy correction, right? Because the episodes are generated using different policy. It's not much different policy. It's quite similar, but because we want to avoid the synchronization issues or the overhead of the synchronization, we just deliberately do the synchronization only once upon a time. And therefore, we use the V-trace. So whenever the actors send the trajectories, they also send the probability of the actions being chosen, right? So they actually send these base behavior policy probabilities so that we can compute the off-policy correction. The overall architecture is very similar to what you expect. The critic just uses the V-trace estimate during training. The actor uses the off-policy correction, the clipped one, and it uses the V-trace to compute the estimate of the Q value function of QSA by one point sample by looking at this one step reward plus gamma times the V trace estimate in the state S plus one. Right, so this is just the stochastic policy gradient. We need the Q value estimate or the G estimate, and we estimate G by one step plus the V-trace. We use the V-trace as the target for the critic, and that's it. And we use the entropy regularization. And the good thing about Impala is that we can actually distribute it very well without making the overhead of the communication to be too large. So their best version, using something like 8 GPUs in the learner machine, can process something like 250,000 frames per second. So per day, you can actually simulate a very large number of environment steps. Furthermore, Impala uses a PBT, population-based training. There are a lot of hyperparameters which we need to train, and the training takes really a long time. So doing the hyperparameter search is very costly. So what we do is we used like a version of a very similar genetic algorithm. Maybe you know it also from some other areas, but it's now quite popular in training the very large scale networks. It's called population-based training. So during training, we have a population of some number of models, in our case, agents. And what we do is we use this population to tune or adapt the entropy regularization strength, the learning rate, the epsilon in RMS prop, and the global gradient norm clipping. And how it works with the PTB. So we train the agents in parallel, each with their own set of hyperparameters. And then when the agent is ready, and by ready, they use 5,000 episodes, then two things will happen. First, if it's not a successful agent, then it will be overwritten by some other agent in the population. So what we do is we compare it to some other agent, and the other one is just randomly selected. And if this randomly selected is better, and what they mean by better is that somehow measured return for 5,000 episodes is better by 5%, then this randomly selected agent will override the current one. So the current one has lost too badly, so it's now being dropped from the population. Instead, we copy the winner, right? So this is like the winner tournament thing. And then, independently on whether we did the copy or not, we mutate the hyperparameters randomly again. So each of these hyperparameters is either increased or decreased or left intact with uniform probability. We do this for a long time, and this allows us to like set these values reasonably, and also to be set like differently during the course of the training. So that's one thing. To see the architectures, they just use what they would expect. These are the architectures for the DM environment. So for Atari, just ignore this right hand side. So there is some convolutional feature extractor. Then we have the fully connected version, and the LSTM is being used during training. So normally we would use this output and generate all the required critic and actor. But what they do is they add an LSTM layer on top of it, which is connected in this horizontal sense. And then they have a better architecture, which is a bit deeper, containing more convolutional blocks. Not required really for Atari, but for the DeepMind Labs environment is used. So these are the results of the Impala. And these versions of various patched A2 CEs and asynchronous A3C and distributed asynchronous A3Cs with a number of workers on the environments from the DM lab. And generally, you can see that the orange and the green results seems to be worse, while the blue seems to be better. And what in the top, these are the training curves. So you can see that the Impala has good or better results than the other methods. And in this bottom line, you can see the sensitivity to hyperparameters. So these are the hyperparameter combinations and the average or minimum, I'm not sure, return is being displayed, right? So this means that for 17 hyperparameter combinations, the Impala was better than even the best version of the A3C or A2C. So it seems that the stability of the training is larger, so the sensitivity to the hyperparameter values is better. So that's a good thing. And now when we look at the training curves, so from the point of the environmental frames, when we use the one set of hyperparameters, the orange one, then using the PBT, that's the bright blue, so it's slightly better than the orange one, right? And then there is also the version which actually trains using 8 GPUs, so that's slightly worse. But if you look at the wall clock times, you can see that it, as you would expect, trains much faster because it uses 8 GPUs instead of one, right? So even if it's trained in, I don't know, a day or something, it can process billions, actually 10 billions of the environmental frames. Looking at the Atari games, the results are reasonably well or good. You can see that actually the deep network actually helps, so I'm sorry that I said that it doesn't. And what's interesting is in this paper, they actually trained an agent which was trained on all of the games at the same time. So it was just one agent which was just used to play any of these Atari games, right? Any of them. And it was able to actually get larger than 100% mean human scores, not the median. So the median is still just 60. But on average, it has better score than humans, being just a single model, which was very interesting. To look at the hyperparameters, what's important is that the Impala still uses reward clipping. So the rewards from the environments are clipped from -1 to 1. Then I don't know what's interesting. Interesting is this unroll length 20. Right, so whenever we compute the V trace, we actually consider the episodes, we consider 20 steps. And other than that, there is the entropy regularization and so on, but they are adapted, these four parameters, right? So I would say the hyperparameters there. And they also evaluate the various ablation experiments, especially how the off-policy correction and how the tracing actually works. So what they consider is a version with no correction, so really just a plain n-step return without caring about the changes in the policies. You can see that in many environments, not all of them, but in many environments, the returns are actually considerably worse. Then there is an epsilon correction. Epsilon correction works by increasing the target policy by some small factor, so that the negative log likelihood wouldn't overflow when we are considering an action which has very low probability under the target policy, right? That's one of the problems. If we have an action which we sample from the behavior policy and it has too little probability in the target policy, then once we compute the likelihood, right, this value will be a very large one, which will create an extremely large gradient and then instability and then divergence during training. So what they do is they just add a small epsilon, and you can see that it actually helps sometimes, like even this minor, well, it doesn't help here, but generally it seems to help a bit. Then we can consider a one-step correction. So we do we don't do enough policy correction in the update of the value function, and we multiply these TD errors by the corresponding rho, but we don't use the C's, right? So this is like a V trace, but without the trace. So we do some simple one-step corrections, but nothing else. And this is not a clear win here, right? For two tasks, it's actually better to do it like this. For these ones, it's better to do it the other way around, but it doesn't seem to be that important. So what they also did is they tried a version with a replay buffer, right? The good thing about the traces is that they can handle the increasing or the larger difference between the target and the behavior policy. So in order to evaluate whether this is the case, they used the replay buffer. Using a replay buffer increases the data efficiency because we can train multiple times on the data, and also it increases the distance between the target and the behavior policy. And in this case, it seems that the V-trace performs better than the one-step correction. So it seems using the traces actually improves actually helps the algorithm. You can see that it was actually able to get even better results on all of them. So for Impala, it actually the performance just improved using the replay buffer, while this is not true for any other algorithm where using the replay buffer actually diminishes the performance, even if, for example, we do this one-step correction, but we don't deal with the traces. So that's the problem, I think. So I think that will be, there are some ablation experiments here. There are the ablation experiments which shows the effect of the policy lag, right? So how number of steps happened, updates without copying the parameters. So there are very small numbers, like 0, 1, 10. Like this means, this is 0 means it's on policy, and then 1 and more, it means the the more number of updates which we didn't perform in the agent. So if we do any correction, usually the performance deteriorates. Like here, even just one update later is half the return, and 10 is this even button here. Once, if we deal with the correction by just adding the epsilon, those results are slightly better. Here, even for example, the 10, the lag of 10 is still trainable. But if you look at the V trace, you can see that the results don't fall that dramatically, and even something like the lag of 500 steps is still reasonably trainable. And there are even situations where this lag of 1 or 10 are actually better than in the on-policy case. So that will be it for today. We will leave the pop-art normalization for the next lecture. So thank you for your attention. It was a bit more technical today at the beginning, but I will fix the errors in the slide. So once you look at them, things will be correct. And I will try to come up with an assignment, which we will be able to try this on at least a bit. Of course, we cannot train 10 billions of environmental frames, but still using the V-trace as the estimate, LSTM, so that you can actually see an agent which trains using the recurrent neural networks. And maybe even a short replay buffer might be doable. So I will see. Thanks for your attention. We will see each other on the Wednesday's practicals. And if you still have some questions, then you can definitely ask. But if you want to go, then by all means, don't hesitate to go. So bye to everybody who goes. Cheers. Bye-bye.